This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Pigtail macaques have a bad reputation as crop raiders, and they're widely regarded as a pest in agricultural crops, including oil palm. But a new study shows that they only cause relatively minor losses in palm oil yield, and more importantly, they actively search for rats, a major oil palm pest. So are macaques acting as a biological pest control in oil palm plantations, fringing their forest habitat? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Dr. Nadine Rupert. She's a senior lecturer and zoologist at the School of Biological Sciences in University Science Malaysia, and she is the corresponding author for this study. Hello, Nadine. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. Thanks for having me.
So glad you could join us. So maybe we can start off by hearing more about the focus of your research and work at USM. I know you focus on primates, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. So I am actually studying many of the Malaysian primate species. So maybe you know that there's 25 species in Malaysia. So that makes Malaysia actually one of the top biodiverse countries in terms of also primate species in Asia. Mm-hmm. So I'm studying ecology, looking into seed dispersal of different species, for example, the langurs, dusky leaf monkeys, mm-hmm. or also the macaques that we're going to talk about later. But I'm also looking into like distribution and abundance estimates of gibbons, the singing apes or mm-hmm. small apes,
yes.
because there's really nothing much that has been done during the past 30 years on gibbon populations in Malaysia, and they're already endangered. Mm-hmm. And we are working on different, as I said, different species and different subtopics, looking into how they different species cope with habitat fragmentation and just their general activities and behaviors, because there's really not much studied on Malaysian primates.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a quick overview of what I'm doing.
Okay, and I think part of that is also human-wildlife interactions also.
Yeah, that's
right, plant-animal interactions or anything, well, related to primates and conservation, I assume. So on that note, you know, I do understand that you and your team from USM, you've actually been studying the ecology and behavior of southern pigtail macaques, and that's been happening since 2013. I mean, tell me a bit more about that. I know there's a project, focused solely on this.
Okay, so yeah, the project is called Macaca nemestrina project. So southern pigtail macaques, the Latin or the scientific name is Macaca nemestrina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people may confuse them with the long-tail macaques. Yeah, mm-hmm. in Malay, you call the long-tail macaques kra, mm-hmm. and the pigtail macaques are actually buruk. So it's different species. Please don't confuse them, because it has some implications. Many people really do not like the long-tail macaques. They're super cheeky and naughty. And of course, they are coming into urban areas like in Kuala Lumpur. You may come across them very often. Now, the cousin, like the pigtail macaque, is a bit more shy. It's more in forested areas. Of course, sometimes there's some human interaction as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now with the project, I've been starting this in like late 2012,
okay.
and it was part of my PhD research, because by then I was looking into seed dispersal of some plant species, and we found that actually pigtail macaques are good seed dispersers. And so I was like trying to get to know more about them, and I was looking into literature and trying to find some studies, and there was really not much done. And so we tried to habituate, meaning make wild macaques comfortable with us, the researchers.
Right.
And we quickly found that this is really, really, really difficult, because, as I said, they're quite shy and they're very elusive, very quiet in the forest.
So the complete opposite of their cousins.
Yeah, sort of. Like, because if people don't feed primates, primates do not tend to seek human contact. And the long-tail macaques are just like, they're very well adapted to human presence.
Mm-hmm,
but that's
mm-hmm.
a bit like another story. So for habituating my study species, it took really long. It took more than 2 years to have one group coming comfortable with researchers following them.
Wow.
And it is, I mean, I don't want to brag about it, but we are currently the only researchers that were successful in habituating this species at the time. So it was something where finally we could get really good behavioral data in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And now we do have two groups. So that's after 5 years of doing this project.
Wow.
So along the way, we have been looking into different aspects. As I said, like general activity patterns, because there's really not much about the behavior of the species in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And also how they interact with oil palm landscapes. So at the study site, the forest where the study group is foraging every day is actually fringed by oil palm plantations as well. Mm-hmm. So we found quickly that they spend quite a significant amount of time in the plantations. And so, yeah, basically, we are still looking into seed dispersal and also into their general sociobiology. It's also something very interesting, like how they interact with each other, mother infants, how they take care of each other, the social hierarchy of the group. So there are many, many different aspects they all need to be studied and addressed.
Okay. And I mean, talk to me about these pigtail macaques. I mean, they are listed as vulnerable, am I correct, in the most recent assessment by the IUCN?
Yeah, that's correct. They are listed as vulnerable currently, but it is important to understand that there is no recent assessment. We do not have any numbers in terms of their population size in Malaysia or elsewhere, actually. So the status vulnerable comes from looking at habitat loss and deforestation. So we cannot really make a clear statement about their actual conservation status. So again, that's another interesting topic that should be addressed in future research as well. Mm-hmm. So they could actually be even more threatened than just the status of IUCN.
Okay, so some of the factors that lead to this is, of course, deforestation, is the conversion of our tropical forest into oil palm plantations. You know, these are some of the major threats, I mean, for many primate species, not just these macaques, right? So what are some of the secondary threats that arise when these wildlife sort of, as you mentioned, invades, you know, the close agricultural lands surrounding what area they have left?
I mean, it's not all about converting forests into oil palm, but definitely that's one aspect that is threatening the habitat and the species. But of course, as you have mentioned, there are secondary threats that arise when usually all wildlife, but now we're talking about the macaques, is coming into close contact with humans. So in the context of like oil palm plantations, often these pigtail macaques, they're considered as crop raiders. Mm. Sometimes people just also, as I said before, might confuse this species with long-tailed macaques that are kind of, they can be found in many other settings like urban areas, and they cause a lot of monkey trouble sometimes. So people might also confuse the species and just be like having a bad perception already before they actually know anything about the southern pigtail macaques themselves. Mm-hmm. But when farmers in oil palm plantations, when they see macaques in general coming into their plantations, they would assume that they eat the fruits and they damage the crops, because obviously farmers, they don't count exactly how many fruits the macaques would eat. So they see like a large group, let's say 60, 70 individuals coming into the plantation. And of course, I mean, the first thing I would think is they're coming for my fruits. Right. So it's not about the real damage, but the perception of the farmers that's actually causing a bad reputation. And along with all these aspects like opening of forests and making prime habitat more accessible to humans, of course, we always have problems with macaques, with primates, even other wildlife being caught for being pets, being kept as pets. And so just to make this clear, like, it's absolutely illegal to have any primate species as pets in Malaysia. There are only a few exceptions where the wildlife department may grant permits. Let's say, for example, for the coconut picking or plugging working monkeys. Mm. But having them as pets in like a condominium somewhere is absolutely illegal. And so there's a lot of issues coming from opening forests, you know, and getting in touch with humans and how humans perceive them and also how they actually handle them. And pet trade is one of these issues as well.
Yeah, and I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. But let's go back to the study. You investigated both the role of macaques as crop pests and also their potential utility as biological pest control. I mean, what led you to investigate those particular aspects? Am I correct in saying that it was your observations from your time studying there, you know, getting familiar with them, that's what led you to focus on this particular area of research?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So, I mean, you have to imagine my field assistants, not me all the time, because I'm now teaching in USM, but basically my students, my volunteers going into the field like basically every day from the morning to the evening to follow these macaques. So it became quite early on, it became quite obvious that, as I said, they spend a lot of time in plantations. And so we were looking into feeding ecology and what they are actually doing in the plantations. Mm-hmm. So when I first saw them, like, actually feeding on rats, I was like, wow, this is interesting because this can really have some implication for pest control. Now, my family, my husband is Malaysian. They also own an oil palm plantation. So I'm familiar with, like, you know, the farming and like smallholders and so on. So I was like, wow, this is really something. So we were trying to get like more systematic data on this, trying to find out whether this is something the macaques do regularly or it's just like a one-off observation. Now, of course, that was interesting also because we know that macaques, they are really up for some protein snacks from time to time. So they do feed on like small birds and lizards and frogs. Mm-hmm. But these rats, if you have seen the pictures, they're pretty big.
They're huge.
So I was like, what are you doing there? Okay. So from like the first time we observed this, and then it took about 2 years to get really systematic data on that. We were really astonished like how many rats they do actively hunt for, actively really look for, forage for in these plantations. So not just opportunistically grab them when they're walking by, no, they're really searching for them. Oh, so this wow. is where I was really surprised, like how systematic they go about this. And yeah, so it's really interesting in terms of primate behavior and ecology that they have developed this sort of foraging strategy to look for rats in plantations. Mm. And also because they consume so much proteins in the plantations. But of course, it has really interesting implications for conservation of the species as well, because when we talk about oil palm plantation landscapes and we are talking about the pest management, the rats are actually the ones causing most damage to the crops. Like right. more than 10% of the actual harvest is usually damaged by crops, according to some previous studies, by the rats, sorry. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to look at this from a conservation perspective and actually when we can kind of, I don't want to use the word promote, but enhance the reputation of the macaques by promoting what they are doing, which is diminishing the real pest in oil palm plantations, then we have like a good argument for conservation of these primates and their landscapes, their prime habitats, which is the forest, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, because the use of rodenticides in pest control, I mean, that's one of the most expensive and I think it's largely inefficient way of controlling these rat populations, right? And it's also been proven to be harmful to non-target wildlife and the environment. So this is like a wonderful win-win situation almost.
So, yeah, exactly. So this is what we try to say with the study is actually, of course, there's other. So, okay, maybe we start first. Like, usually the conventional methods in many oil palm plantations is large scale poisoning of rats. Mm-hmm. And this is usually done with rodenticides. So, there's different types of poison you can use. But usually, rats can also become resistant to these types right. of poisons. Mm-hmm. And so, the long-term effects, they are not really fantastic because the other thing is rats are super smart. They might even avoid taking in the bait when they had like a bad experience before. Mm-hmm. So the second thing is that these poisons, they cause environmental damage. The poison itself, they might come into like sink into the soil, come into the streams and waterways. And of course, there's a lot of secondary poisoning, like, for example, barn owls or other predators, they might feed on rats that have already ingested poison. So the poison is usually working very slowly, like over a few days. The rats won't die immediately after ingestion. So there's still time where other predators can actually catch rats mm-hmm. and they might die. So then, of course, it's a cost factor as well, an economic factor, like how much money oil palm farmers, especially smallholders, actually willing to pay for getting rid of the rats. So there's different things working together. So now with the macaques, what we are trying to say is that as another species in addition to the barn owls that are also already widely used in especially plantations that are working in the certified sustainable palm oil scheme, the macaques can complement those barn owls in a really great way because barn owls are night active and they would like fly over the plantation grounds and catch the rats that are running over the ground. Mm-hmm. Whereas the pygmy macaques, they are active during the day and they, as I said before, they use this very interesting foraging strategy. So they would climb up the trees and they would like rip off leftover leaf bases And in these cavities between the stem and the leaf bases are usually the rats are hiding there during the day when they're sleeping.
Right.
So when the macaques go through, you know, very systematically through the palm tree itself, sometimes on top near the crown, and really chase out or quickly catch those rats that are sleeping in these cavities. So these two predators, they complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's also interesting, like how different species can enhance ecological services in oil palm plantations, enhance biodiversity if they are left to do what they're doing best in these plantations.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for the macaques, what we say is we do not want to use them like barn owls. They would have nest boxes. They are actually lured into plantations via these nest boxes, and they are what we really say or can say they are being used as pest control.
Mm-hmm.
But for macaques, we don't want this. We don't want people to catch them and like put them in a plantation and pets or something. This is really something that we want to emphasize on. What we are saying is we have to keep forests intact and like establish forest corridors, wildlife corridors, or buffers in and around existing oil palm plantations. So to preserve the habitat of the primates and allow them to come into plantations in a like easier manner, because many plantations, if they are too large, of course there is no access, there's no forest nearby where macaques could come in.
Right.
Establishing these corridors, this is actually what we are trying to argue for.
So it's basically maintaining a sort of a functional connectivity. Am I correct?
Yes,
right.
Exactly. That's how you call it. Yeah.
And there's another thing. I mean, also gene flow between macaque populations, that also will be increased, through maintaining their natural habitats as well.
Yeah, absolutely correct. So that's another thing. And that's also something we want to look into, like the current situation of how is the population diversity, the genetic diversity of populations that are fragmented, actually affected by, especially by oil palm, but also, I mean, you can talk about any sort of forest fragmentation, also urban areas and so on. Yeah. But like there's really no study on these primates, and there's a lot of things that we want to look into. And this is what you just said. That's exactly one point that we're also interested in.
Okay. And how are you hoping these findings will be used? I know that you want existing oil palm plantations to sort of take this into consideration, you know, when marking out their plantations. Am I correct? I mean, what are some of your hopes from this study?
So firstly, the big hope for, like, in the larger context of conservation, especially for many other charismatic animal species in Malaysia and elsewhere, is, yeah, to preserve the forests and, if possible, establish wildlife corridors. And because the macaques now, they can just act as like an umbrella species to protect other wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of also elephants coming into plantations. That's another issue, for example, that is regularly coming up as well, like in Sabah just recently. So now we have an economic argument saying, okay, we can actually hopefully save some money by not using so many rodenticides if we provide access for macaques into plantations, and this is via wildlife corridors. And this will benefit many other species, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So one is the conservation of the habitat itself. This is something we really hope to make a strong argument with this study. And the second one is trying to mitigate human-macaque interactions or conflicts. As I have mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
the perception of macaques generally isn't fantastic in Malaysia and elsewhere, but often it's because of misunderstandings, and often it's because of humans. Firstly, it all starts with feeding or providing food opportunities, and then the macaques generally can become quite cheeky. And as I said before, there's a lot of negative things that might go about it.
Yeah.
But the other thing is people don't know how to actually react or act when they see macaques. And this is also happening in plantations, where I heard that, for example, workers, when they bring their lunch boxes, the macaques, may it be pigtails or the long-tail macaques, they find out that they can grab this food for free. And then all these like unwanted, let's not call it conflicts, but interactions, they may happen. So what I also want to do is like working with people, especially now in the oil palm sector, to mitigate those human macaque interactions that are unwanted, and teach them, tell them how to act if they see the primates. So to promote like a better reputation, if you want to say this, because again, this works towards conservation. Yeah.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Nadine Rupert. She's a senior lecturer and zoologist at the School of Biological Sciences at University of Science Malaysia. And we're discussing the study of pigtail macaques in oil palm plantations. Are they the pest or are they actually the pest control? Coming up after this break, this study actually gained worldwide media attention. And we're going to address some of the things that they didn't get quite right. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line from Penang is Dr. Nadine Rupert. She's a senior lecturer and zoologist at the School of Biological Sciences at University of Science Malaysia. She was also the corresponding author for a study on pigtail macaques in oil palm plantations. And we were discussing how they are actually acting as a biological pest control in these plantations and not actually the pest itself, you know, foraging for the fruits and eating it. So, you know, as I mentioned before the break, Nadine, this, you know, received worldwide media attention, and you know, I think everyone has that image of the macaques, you know, eating these really large rats.
Yeah.
Headlines everywhere. And I think a lot of people didn't realize, I know you mentioned this earlier, but we didn't realize that, you know, macaques actually, they're omnivores. They're not herbivores as such, right? And I think a lot of the headlines, you know, put them as killer monkeys and some crazy things. I mean, walk me through that. You know, what are some of the things that you would like clarified?
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it was really, still is overwhelming. We did not expect that the media would pick this topic and make it like such a sensational headline. And I mean, it's fantastic because what we, as I said before, what we want to gain with this study is some like real conservation output to protect the macaques and also the forest. Mm. Now, they had been portrayed in a few headlines as greedy killer monkeys
and things
like that. I mean, it is obviously helping to promote the study, so make it more sensational, more people yeah. will share. But as I said before, the reputation of the macaques generally is not that great already. And some people might misunderstand those headlines and then make it even like might get like a worse, you know, feeling about the macaques when they see them as killer monkeys or something. Mm. Now, there's a few things, of course, that have been reported where I would like to make some just some corrections. I have said this in the first segment of the show already. So the first thing is we do not want to use them as pest control. Maybe this is something people might think of. It's easy. You just capture some of the macaques and you put them in some of the plantations and they live happily ever after and everybody's happy, but that's not how it works. So especially the southern pigtail macaques, they really depend on intact forest habitats. So they, as you said before, they're omnivores, meaning they eat all different types of food, but 70% of their diet really still consists of fruits, and usually the fruits you find in the forest, not the palm oil fruits. Mm-hmm. Or oil palm fruits. And so they depend on the forest. So putting them into plantations as working animals is something we really, really, really do not want to see in the future. Mm-hmm. As I said before, we want to protect the forest. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is I was quoted as being stunned that they eat meat. So I had some emails coming in like saying, oh, you are primatologist. You should know that macaques eat meat. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, like if that was misquoted. I said I was really, and I am still stunned at how they eat this really large rats, as you have seen the picture, and how much meat they really eat. So from the study, the numbers in 1 year, they devour more than 3,000 rats. And this is something I was not expecting when we started the study, that it's actually such a high number and that it has an effect on the rat populations themselves. This is what we tested. Mm. So they do diminish the population size of the rats. So I'm still stunned that this is something that, as I said, they actively go hunt and forage for these rats. I'm not surprised they eat meat. They do eat other small animals as well. But these rats, they are huge. So yes. Something. And it was a bit shocking. I mean, as other headlines, they quoted me as being shocked. It's, as I said, it's stunning and it's a bit shocking to see them literally dismembering these large rodents and chewing off the head first. So, yeah. Of course, it's a bit gross and like looking at it is a bit shocking, yeah. But from the scientific point of view, we as primatologists, we were not shocked or stunned to see this. We are really surprised and really now happy to have a good argument to, again, advocate for their conservation.
So I think one of the other things that was mentioned was that pigtail macaques are regularly shot by plantation staff.
I do not say or have never said that they are regularly shot. What we have mentioned in the article is, and you have mentioned that as well, is that there are some human wildlife conflicts, and the macaques are also center point of these conflicts. In orchards and other, especially in the kampung, in the villages, people, they have them sometimes coming into their houses, into their kitchen. So usually the long-tailed macaques, yeah. But again, so misconceptions about the two species and the general conflicts arising from close contact to humans. And this is also being translated into these negative interactions that are happening in plantations. So from my personal experience, what I have seen in the area where we work is that smallholders, they try to maybe chase them away with firecrackers. If they have an air gun, something like that, they would shoot in the air. But sometimes they're also setting up traps and maybe trap them and try to translocate them. So this is something I have seen personally. I've never seen anybody really shooting them. Right. So, and I do not want to say that as a statement that like in oil palm, in the oil palm sector, that they are regularly shot. So this is something that was misquoted as well.
Yeah. And I think another thing that we did allude to earlier was that pigtail macaques are not aggressive and won't attack people. That was something that's
very important, actually, to point out. So I have maybe said this as well in the first segment. So if the pigtail macaques are left alone in the wild, they are very shy, very elusive. They would not seek human contact. And this is why it took almost like 3 years to habituate our study groups.
That's right.
And it's really, really hard to follow them in the forest because they are so shy. But all animals, primates and other species, they will change their behavior if people start feeding them. And this is what is happening a lot in urban areas and parks, and especially in Kuala Lumpur, where maybe in Ampang, there's some years ago, this headline went viral where somebody like threw a firecracker towards the pigtail macaques as well. And one lost his finger, one of the pigtail macaques, he later died because human interactions are happening. And it all starts with feeding primates. Then they become less shy, then they tend to seek the food. They are not able anymore to forage in the forest. They don't, it's not that they're not able anymore. They are smart. They know that human food is much better. It's like more sugar, more calories. It's easy to get.
Yeah.
Of course, you go for the easy snack, right?
Yeah.
So they change their behavior. And then there are cases where they can become aggressive. And especially if people keep them as pets. Every human as well, if you tear apart like the baby and the mom and you capture the baby and you keep it in a cage for so many years, and later on when they become big and they're not cute anymore, the owners don't know how to handle them. They're just if you look at pictures online, you will see they have huge canines. Yeah, so they are really like a little weapon of, you know, they are sturdy, they're big in body size, they are. If they become aggressive, they can kill people, and they have killed people. So this happened before, and these were pets, yeah, or ex-pets that people then release. If they don't know how to handle them anymore, they just release them back into the forest. And of course, these mentally challenged individuals have lost their natural behavior, and they have changed, and they seek human contact, they seek human food, and then they tend to attack people. This happens, this has happened before, and this is something clearly where people need to understand that you should never keep primates as pets or any other wildlife, because there's a lot of negative implications arising from that.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that a lot, especially with the gibbons as well, right? A lot of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the other thing was macaques keep all palm plants alive. Did you want to clarify that?
That's something, I mean, it's not really like, it's not a huge thing. It's just to understand that the rats are the major pests of the oil palm fruits. Mm-hmm. And now the plants themselves, of course, when you plant new oil palm saplings, they might also be attacked by other species. Sometimes, most usually, it's actually the wild boars and maybe some of the rats, they cause these damages to the small plants that... But it's not that the macaques keep the plants alive. I mean, the macaques just feed on the rats, and the rats, they are the major pest for the fruits themselves.
Yeah.
So they, what we say, and this headline has already been corrected actually, is the macaques, they may contribute to making the oil palm management in terms of pest control more sustainable, more green, because by using biological pests, generally, and this is like a very important issue now for the Malaysian context with Malaysian sustainable palm oil certification schemes and everything that's going on at the moment. This is a really nice contributor to making this industry more sustainable and providing more, or just as we said before, greener practices and biological pest control and finding species that can use oil palm plantations, also then enhance biodiversity and other ecological services in plantations, is something that should really be considered by plantation owners, you know, to keep biodiversity, to keep forests, and to keep the ecosystem as healthy as possible in a monocultural landscape.
Okay. And I mean, just to conclude, Nadine, you know, what are you going to work on next? I mean, following this and, you know, such great response to this study, you know, it's wonderful.
Going to retire.
No, you can't. There's not enough study on primates.
No, so I mean, coming from this, there's so many new questions and aspects that we are hopefully going to look in the future. And provided we get funding for this, that's another thing that is important to mention. So if anybody is interested in funding our study, please find my email address online. We want to look into different other aspects of how macaques are affected by oil palm and also how they affect oil palm landscapes. So firstly, as I've mentioned before, how is their genetic diversity, how are meta populations actually affected by fragmentation? And this can be from oil palm, this can be from many other factors that mm-hmm. affect forest loss or degradation. And the second aspect is, when the macaques feed on rats, like how is there any like the parasite and disease transmission happening between the two species, and maybe between other species that are also foraging in oil palm plantations? So I'm thinking about cattle. So many oil palm, especially the smallholders, they do have cows, cattle in their plantations. Right. So there can be a lot of cross infections in terms of parasites as well as diseases mm-hmm. that can be transmitted between the different species. As we know that rats are known to be one of the major vectors for many common diseases. Yeah. The third aspect, what I'm actually very much interested in now in terms of how do the plantations affect the macaques themselves, is if plantations conventionally use a lot of herbicides as well as fertilizers, chemical fertilizers. So when the macaques are foraging in the plantations for prolonged periods of time, as seen in my study groups, is there any health implication for them? So there is a really interesting study from Africa where chimps have been seen to be affected by agricultural practices using herbicides. And so, for example, females become infertile or there are facial deformations like missing nose and things you know, some of the factors that might, like maybe genetically, that poison affect the genetics of the primates. So this is something I want to look in as well, because we have some hints that in our study group there might be some effect. So this is what we want to test. I can't say this yet.
Right.
But so how are practices, conventional practices, actually affecting the health of the macaques? And of course, the fourth and maybe most important point is we want to also engage the stakeholders in the palm oil industry to promote the study, to say how can we work together in terms of managing human-macaque interactions, but also maybe in terms of designing plantations, new plantations, to become greener, so providing wildlife corridors from the start, or maybe reforesting areas in and around plantations that are already existing. So to provide this win-win situation where, like as an economic argument, maybe they can save money on rodenticides and then provide access to macaques, and by allowing these forests to be intact, also protecting other wildlife species.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, the push for sustainable palm oil production, I mean, that's huge, that's worldwide, right? So this is something that would really help in that area as well.
Yeah, exactly. So this is something like sustainable palm oil, something definitely the way forward.
Yeah.
Maybe another statement in terms of boycotting, especially internationally, many people call for boycott of palm oil.
That's right.
I personally do not agree, because palm oil is the most efficient oil crop. And if we switch to other crops like soy or rapeseed or Yeah, it's not going to yield as much. So in the end, you might lose even more forests. Mm-hmm. But pushing for sustainable palm oil certified, transparent practices and like becoming a greener in this area is definitely the way forward.
So obviously, Nadine, you cannot retire. You've got too much work ahead of you. But, you know, if anyone would like to follow the work that you are doing, you know, how best can they do that?
So my project has a Facebook page. It's called Makakane Mistrina Project. And we usually post like quick updates on our Facebook. Mm-hmm. We also have a homepage. It's www.makaka-nemistrina.org. And this one I really have to update now. So the other way, of course, I'm happy to answer any questions via my email address. And I think now you can Google me quite easily. One thing that I want to say is if anybody is interested in joining the project as a field assistant, a volunteer field assistant, mm-hmm. we are really welcoming Malaysians to become part of the team, because until now I had many international students. Usually Malaysians are not too much interested in primates. I don't know why, because all the Germans and everybody coming and they're absolutely fascinated by primates, but maybe because you have so many, it's becoming normal.
Taking it for granted, so as always.
Yeah, exactly. So if somebody's up to do real research and get your hands dirty and be in the field, so please contact me. Yeah, and I provide also, of course, study opportunities as a lecturer here in USM. There's ways of, you know, taking part in the postgraduate research like master's or PhD. So there will be updates on the Facebook, updates on the website if there's any opportunities. So just get in touch with us.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Dr. Nadine Rupert. She's a senior lecturer and zoologist at the School of Biological Sciences at University Science Malaysia. She was also the corresponding author for the study on pigtail macaques in oil palm plantations, which found that they do act as a biological pest control in these oil palm plantations, which are fringing their forest habitat. So, of course, there is a push to actually preserve, rainforest habitat, which is crucial for the macaques to survive, you know, and create a win-win situation. Well, for everyone, biodiversity and the oil palm plantations. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.